When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Gotta Get Shots YouTube channel and podcast. And we are back for another match reaction. Reaction?
Haven't played the game yet.
No, we are back for another match preview as Newcastle United welcome West Ham to St. James's Park on Saturday lunchtime at 12:30. A game you can see live in the UK on TNT Sports. And we are joined for this one by Chris and Andy. Hello, guys. How are you doing? You all right?
Grand. If we're doing a match reaction, that was rubbish, wasn't it? Splash. What an amazing game that was. Just cut whichever one it was.
Chris, how are you doing, mate? You good?
I'm good, mate. I really good. Sadly, I'm missing this game coming up. I'm not seeing James's Park because I'm at work, but I will see everybody afterwards because I'm coming for a few drinks after the game.
Oh, nice one. Brilliant. Oh, we'll see after the game, after the win or loss, as Andy was just saying there, depending on if we're doing this as a preview or reaction. So we're going to get right into it. But before we do, here is a word from our sponsor.
The Gallagher Shots match preview is brought to you by Magpin. Magpin are the go-to site for high quality, unofficial enamel pin badges of Newcastle United players, legends and retro kits. For more information, visit their website at magpinbadges.bigcartel.com.
Thank you, Scott. And if anybody's around the game on Saturday, you might even see Scott because he is over for this one. So give him a wave and maybe even buy him a pint because he deserves one. So this is Saturday lunchtime, as we mentioned, and it's going to be 10th place Newcastle United. They're facing 7th place West Ham. We are 4 points behind West Ham with a game in hand. So we do have the potential to perhaps, if results go our way, overtake them in the next couple of weeks. So we are on 28 games played, West Ham on 29, and we're in again. You know, we mentioned it a couple of previews ago, I think for the Wolves game, we mentioned it about, you know, this is this little mini league that's suddenly developed in the middle of the table from 7th down to 11th, with ourselves, West Ham, Brighton, Wolves and Chelsea. Now Chelsea are the dark horses now at the minute because they are a point behind us. However, they now have 2 games in hand on West Ham, who have played 29. And we're going to start with a little bit from me on this one, this time around, and we're going to talk about the last time that we played West Ham. The reverse fixture this season was a 2-2 draw down at the London Stadium back in October, which was right after, for good memories, the home win against PSG in the Champions League. We all remember that very happy time. 2-2 draw with goals from Suchek and Kudus for West Ham and 2 for Alexander Isak for our good selves. And we'll come back to that in a little bit. We've got a little stat for that one. Kudus actually equalised for West Ham right at the very end of the game in the 89th minute, a game that we had turned it around quite well. And I think Eddie Howe in the post-match for that one called it a bit of a hangover from the PSG game. And he was very unhappy with how they were performing in the first half.
I think we're still hungover now.
Oh, well, it's a hell of a lot hungover, isn't it?
I think Isak in that game, Daryl, Isak got a couple of goals within like 5 minutes or something after that, didn't he?
Two in five, 57 and 62 he scored right in front of us in the away end as well, which was great. And, you know, it was, you know, we were lacklustre and we definitely were hungover in that first half. And to turn it around that we did and to then just sort of let it slip right at the end was a little bit of a kick in the teeth. But again, after that game against PSG, you would have taken the draw down there anyway. And just to go on to the last time that we played West Ham at St. James's Park, we go all the way back to February of last year, a and it was a 1-1 draw. Goals from Wilson in the 3rd minute and then Lucas Paquetá in the 32nd. And in between that time as well, we had a rearranged game at the London Stadium because of the death of Queen Elizabeth. That one was played later in the season, and that one ended in a 5-1 win to our good selves. A game that I was there for and thoroughly enjoyed, even though I missed Wilson's goal at the start of the second half. But pints were important at that time. We'll quickly also go over that. So I did briefly mention there about Alexander Isak. He has 3 goals in his last 3 games against West Ham. The 2 against West Ham down at the London Stadium and then 1 in the game at the London Stadium last season. Similarly, although this is more of a benefit for the West Ham fans who are watching or listening to us on this one, Callum Wilson is not going to be available, and I'm sure our West Ham fans are very well aware of just how good Callum Wilson's record against West Ham is. He pretty much scores in every game that he plays against them. And also, another little stat here, we have, for those watching or counting the cards and games situation with Bruno and with also Anthony Gordon, because he's quite close now, there are 4 more games to go before the cut-off for the ban. So that's this one against West Ham. You've got Everton on Tuesday, Fulham next weekend, and then Spurs the weekend after, and then it's a clean
do you know what the club should do, Daryl? This is just appeals to people that used to watch wrestling back in the day. Remember when Chris Jericho was going to make an appearance, and it kept on coming up on the screen, a countdown?
Yes.
We should just do that for Bruno until obviously we can just have free reign. That's what we should do. Right.
For him that'll to get a straight red game in the next game, probably.
Lally, you mentioned before we started recording, obviously he's been on international duty playing in England, came up against Gordon, and he basically just used that 90 minutes of football just to kick the shit out of people, didn't he?
Yeah.
It's like those rage rooms you can go to, you know where you go, and they've got lots of like abandoned cars and baseball bats. I think he just needs one of them, doesn't he? Bless him. I didn't watch that game, but I heard he got into a bit of a scuffle with Bellingham as well. And he had a tasty tackle with him, I think, didn't he?
And also, Anthony Gordon is just 2 yellow cards away from the same ban that Bruno is threatened with. So same sort of time scale as well. 4 games for Gordon to get 1 more yellow and then hold off until the cut-off point. We'll come on to the injuries and whatnot a little bit later, but we're going to switch over to Chris, who's been listening to some West Ham podcasts, haven't you?
I have. Great. I've done this, normally Andy, you do this, hence why I text you beforehand just to see if you had done it. But I put myself through it, not all of it, because it was an hour
long. Hard work, isn't it?
It is. But do you know what it is? I'll even say which podcast it was, because they were decent lads, to be fair. They were called Hamas Chat. And the way they set the podcast up was very similar to what we do. It was very like laid back approach to things and things like that. And do you know what it is? At the very start, they're very complimentary about Newcastle United. They spoke about how things change and how the Premier League set certain rules when Newcastle's ownership went through and how it wasn't fair on us. Obviously, I think they were looking at us as what they could potentially be in the future in regards to ownership and thinking, well, if they've done that to Newcastle, it just affects everybody else that is outside of that top 6. So they looked at it the same as what we'll probably expect others that aren't in that elite football club bracket that people argue about. But very complimentary about work. They mentioned that our season is very similar to their season, where they'll go on a run of form where you'll pick up a couple of decent wins, then you couldn't lose the next 2. Seeing their form is very similar to what ours was. And I think from the 2 lads I was listening to, they fully backed Moyes, and I know there's been a lot of noise from certain sections of West Ham fans that want Moyes out. Probably very similar to what we see on social media, with a certain part of our fan groups that want Eddie Howe removed. But very, very similar positions to what we are. And do you know what it is? They are missing Alvarez for this upcoming game, and they class themselves as not a one-man team, but a team which is heavily reliant on him. But obviously, they do have other players in. They've got Bowen, which is a huge threat. They've got Paqueta, who we know is a great player as well, and many others. But they're very worried with Alvarez being missing. also they weren't a big fan of Zuma either. I think that the phrase which they used to describe him, he is the least worst option. I'm all for that. And do you know what is that? The Stars talking about Zuma, and they are unbelievably scared of Isak and what Isak can do. You mentioned there, Daryl, that it used to be Wilson that used to get these goals against West Ham. It seems like you just passed that baton on to Isak at the minute as well. So hopefully Isak will get a couple of goals there. But I think they're looking at this in the position of European football is in their hands now, and it's up to them to lose that position because, like we said at the start, they're sat in seventh place. Whereas we're chasing the pack as such. And in 10th, yes, we do have a game in hand. But then they were on the fence whether or not a game in hand was a better thing than rather than having points on the board at this point of the season, which I don't know what my stance is on that one, to be fair, because it's such a difficult talking point and trying to think which is the better. Are you rather chasing or having that little extra step? But just to go on to what they mentioned about what they expect the results to be, they're worried that they have no backup after the starting 11, heavy reliant on that starting 11, similar to what we probably were earlier in the season. But I don't think it's necessarily injury concerns with them, it's just quality concerns. But they think St. James's Park will play a huge factor in this. Had a bit of a whinge about where the Wii fans sit, as everybody does. but one of the lads thought Newcastle would run wild with a 3-1 win. The other one was a bit more conservative and was hopeful for a 1-1 draw. So they're not confident coming up here. So I think as long as we are top of our game, hopefully we can damage them. They don't think they'll exploit that area where Botman is normally playing as well. I think that they just don't have enough attacking threat at the top of the field apart from Bowen. So honestly, mate, they weren't very hopeful.
It's interesting, you know, because they brought Alvarez in, and you mentioned that they're not a one-man team, but you could have said the same thing about Declan Rice when he was there last season. And he's very much, Alvarez himself is very much the man that they brought in to fill that void that he's left. And again, it seems that their whole style is sort of based around whoever it is that sits in the midfield, and then they work out from there what their avenues are for attack and how they defend. And just to add on to that, I think, and I don't want to step on Andy's toes too much because I know he's going to talk about West Ham, but for me, I think they don't give themselves enough credit, because you also got to think about James Ward-Prowse and his profligacy from what he can do in midfield, and, you know, his set piece deliveries and all that. I mean, I'm half expecting us to start putting balls out for throw-ins rather than letting corners go on Saturday, because I don't want to see James Ward-Prowse putting a corner in. I certainly don't expect to see anybody getting fouled on the edge of the box either, because that's just asking for bother from his right foot, no end. I wonder if the two lads presenting that podcast might own cats, if that's why they don't like Zuma so much. But, you know, we'll see. Andy, what can you add for that one? So what else do we need to know about West Ham?
Yeah, well, it's interesting, Chris, saying that there, because my perception of West Ham is that the fans really don't like Moyes and that they're actually really good going forward. So it's weird that people from inside think the opposite to what
it says. Clarify, about it. Just to clarify, what they did mention is that they do have attacking threats, and they mentioned four players. Bourne was one of them, Pakatar was another one. I can't remember the other two. But they weren't overly critical about going forward. They're just more concerned about defending. Like I said, Zuma was the least worst option out of that. Then they started talking about other options. And I think the phrase that they said on that one, when they're talking about other ones, they just said, don't like that. So
it's mad, isn't it? I wonder if it's just the same for us. They're like so complimentary of us, and we sit here going, oh, we're absolutely terrible this season, blah, blah, blah. And then they're like, oh, Newcastle are absolutely mint. So it's just interesting, isn't it? That's why I like doing that and hearing fans have got to say about their own clubs, because we always say about like journalists and things like that, you don't know what it's like as a fan, we know more than you, da, da, da. So the best place to get the information about the opposition 100%. Is from them. So it works. But I did a bit of digging as well, because my opinion of West Ham was that a lot of the fans think Moyes has got the handbrake on. That's the phrase that I see used quite a lot.
Yeah.
And that he's such a conservative manager. But when you look at the stats, even though you kind of perceive them as being a defensive team, they've got, there's only three teams worse than them in the league in terms of XG against, which I know people don't always like that stat, but effectively they concede loads of chances. The only teams that are worse than them is the bottom three at the moment. And when you
are
look
not
at,
in there as well.
No, we're actually not that bad. And yeah, but our stats are all skewed by the Sheffield United game anyway, so it doesn't really make much of a difference. But they tend to set up in a similar sort of way every time. Zuma did play centre back, but they have that Aguerd as well, who's pretty good. It's usually Areola in goal, Soufal, Mariopoulos, Greek chap centre back. Yep, cheers. Zuma, Emerson, then they have Alvarez normally, and then they have Souček as the other sitting midfielder. Bowen, Pakatar, Kudus, Antonio. But we've seen them kind of mix it around a lot where when Antonio's been injured, Bowen's been up front. James Ward-Prowse sometimes plays as a number 10. They've got options kind of all over the place. And I think what you mentioned about Declan Rice, I think they did sign Alvarez to replace him, but I think they signed him to replace his defensive qualities. Then they signed people like Ward-Prowse, Kudus for the ball carrying and going forward. So they had to sort of replace him with three players, which says a lot about how good Declan Rice is. when you go through the form, you kind of understand why West Ham fans sometimes get a bit annoyed with them, because they drew against Villa and were actually really unlucky not to beat them. They smashed Freiburg in the Europa League 5-0. They had a draw against Burnley where they came back from 2-0 down. They were getting smashed, but then they've had the two wins before that, but then they had a loss to Forest, lost to Arsenal, lost to Man United, drew with Bournemouth, drew with Sheffield United, lost to Bristol City, drew with Bristol City. So it's like, just like seem really flaky and inconsistent. And I think that would be the most annoying thing from them. And I think this has been an issue from the fans about the owners generally, is that they never really seem to kick on any time. They always have a decent season and then they kind of just like float back into mid-table mediocrity, a bit like we were under Ashley, I suppose. And just another thing, which I think is a bit of a similarity to how Moyes is officially the latest substitute maker in the league after Pep. So he waits longer than anyone else in the league. And we know Pep doesn't really do it because his starting 11 is ridiculous. But he's also got the oldest bench in the league as well. So he's getting a lot of criticism for not making changes in games, but maybe a similar issue to us, but also the opposite issue to us, in that he looks to his bench and just says, what's the point? Whereas we're kind of doing that at the minute as well, because we're looking at like 10-year-olds on the bench, whereas Moyes is looking at all these old gadgets who can't run anymore.
Which, Andy, goes back to the point where the lads in this podcast will mention that aside from that starting 11, they don't really have any other option, and it's nothing to do with quality, it's just personnel that are there.
Well, they'll be annoyed as well that they sign someone like Phillips to fill a bit of a void as well, and he's been an absolute horror show, hasn't he?
So basically
conceded a goal and got sent off.
You mentioned that position there with like Alvarez and things like that, with him missing one of the lads highlighting, saying that why can't they then look at the academy to bring somebody in if Moyes doesn't trust those that are on the bench, the older players, why can't you look at the academy? And they use Miley as a reference to that, saying at some point Eddie Howe's had to make that decision, obviously with the Tonali ban, to bring Miley into the basically in the starting 11, because that's all that the options were, and how well he did, like a duck to water, really. Obviously coming up against PSG, Dortmund, basically everybody got Miley, had a baptism of fire, and how well he did, and they were really frustrated that Moyes didn't trust him.
I mean, the only one I can remember is that Ben Johnson coming through, but I think he's played a little bit, but that's kind of it. So yeah, that would be annoying. Yeah, fullback. Yeah.
It's interesting, you know, you're talking there, and I've actually lost the train of thought I had. I might have to come and revisit that in a minute.
Was it Phillips? Was it about Phillips?
It was. Yes, it was. It was Phillips. Yes.
Well done.
So you mentioned there about Alvarez not being available. It's quite possible we're probably going to see Calvin Phillips on Saturday, which is very interesting. As Andy said, his start to life at West Ham has been rather interesting.
I've got another quote from this podcast.
Oh, have you?
I love the quote from this podcast.
Is it one word?
Two. They describe Calvin Phillips' start as stinky start.
Stinky start. I think I would probably go with something along the lines of a car crash, but
We dodged the bullet there, like.
Well, massive. I think I put that in the group. I think not last week or the week before, recently, a few weeks ago.
I think first game we'll put that in the group peril.
A bullet well dodged with him. Jesus. Although then again, when you haven't been playing first team football for a long time, these sort of things will happen. You'll just drop out of form.
Then again, though, He has had a stinky start. But you know what it is? They have put so much money into that signing in regards to signing on fees, purchasing fees, and then obviously the wages as well.
Yeah.
Like,
well, how much did they market him when they signed him as well? Exactly. Even all the media around it, they pushed it so much, and then it was now he's just, I forgot they even had him. So I was looking into it.
They need this signing to work because they put so much into it.
Yeah. It's a way to, like, I'm not going to say the word I was going to say, but it's a way to throw £7.5 million down the drain for what?
Was it just a loan, or was it like obligation to buy at the end of it?
I don't know if there is an obligation. Option? I won't be taking the option up at this rate. Before we move on to talking about Newcastle, I do want to just quickly mention, and this is the one for everybody who always likes to criticise him for being negative. I'm not going to be negative here. We're going to have the West Ham United record at St James's Park in the Premier League era. And that is 25 games played, 12 Newcastle United wins, 8 draws and 5 defeats. So West Ham's it's very decent, isn't it? I mean, West Ham's record here isn't the best. So it's very much stacked in our favour. And the most recent win for West Ham, I think, was a 4-2 win at the start of the 2020-2021 season, I think.
I feel like I remember that.
And still Callum Wilson scored, so it doesn't matter. So that's the record there at West Ham. And as we move on to the Newcastle United side of things, we've already talked about Bruno and Gordon and their card situation and the bans and whatnot. So we'll get on to players who won't be featuring or may not be featuring. We'll talk about the injuries and the doubts and the suspensions and whatnot. So
don't go through all of it. It'll be a 40-minute video.
Oh, no, it won't be. It'll be very quick. So we know who's out. We know it's Tenali, Pope, Wilson, Jordan, and obviously two new additions to that list over the last couple of weeks have been Sven Botman with his ACL injury, and also this very week, yesterday, it broke as of recording. As of the time of recording, was that Lewis Miley suffered a back injury that has first been reported as keeping him out for 6 weeks. However, potentially could rule him out for the rest of the season, which is a massive, massive blow to our chances of having some depth in midfield.
We need a chiropractor at the club. These back injuries are coming in. Like,
what are we doing with the backs? Like, if we employed the doctor of human centipede,
dropping anvils on them, apparently.
Well, this one necessarily can't be blamed on us because he's suffered it on international duty. So
I'll find a way, Dasmo. Don't you worry about that.
And then that's obviously covered by the doubts with Trippier, Barnes. Livermore was a doubt potentially still after missing. Which game was it? He missed the Wolves game.
It was down at illness. Man City.
It was the Man City game that he missed. And also this week, we find that Martin Dubravka was sent home from the Slovakia camp for an unspecified personal reason. So
probably because he conceded a goal in 6 seconds.
Well, that would harm anybody.
Just from embarrassment.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'd be shot away if that happened to me. And I think, at the time of recording, he has to join that list of doubts. But I think in terms of those who are doubtful, I think we can all safely assume that we can assume that they'll probably be back. Trippier was scheduled back this week. Barnes was just a slight injury, I think. Was it his hamstring? He felt some tightness in, so I hope he's had...
Tina was running around a building site the other day, like, so he might be arried.
Aye, he was. Aye, with his special hard hat on. The black hard hat that's clearly not bright and yellow and
do you find it? Do you find it a bit strange that there hasn't really been much from the club, but obviously a handful of the lads have been away for a warm weather camp.
Yeah,
like, well, there hasn't been much from the club, has it?
No, they've been very quiet. I think a lot of the clips you hear from Eddie Howe over the last fortnight have been from immediately after the Man City game, and then I think he's made in between that has been something that's come by the club through the official club channel. But
he's done a couple of things for the Premier League with the inspirational stuff, hasn't he?
You're very much right that it's been a very quiet fortnight from the club, which is probably just what they need around about now, to be fair. They need that little bit of time just to settle and just crack on with the work that they need to do while the lads are away doing their international stuff. It'll be interesting to see how we line up. We can probably try and talk about how we think we'll line up, but this is Eddie Howe bingo. Is anybody who's injured really injured, or is anybody who's fit just not going to be playing because they're going to pick up an injury all of a sudden? Like Tino did before the Man City game, which was very unfortunate, of course. So we'll start at the back, and obviously we know that Dubravka at the time of recording, as we've said, is a potential doubt, but if he's fit, he'll be in. And then we'll go across the back four. Again, questions come into play. The only surviving member we have at the back four at the minute is probably going to be Fabian Schär. And then you're going to have...
And Dan Burn, to be fair.
Yeah, Dan Burn as well.
Dan Burn, the centre-back.
The centre-back, yeah. Yes. That's been a very hot topic in the group chat
today. That's a great point, to be fair, though, Andy. Like, obviously, with the issue with Botman, does Lascelles come straight back in, or do you move Dan Burn in there? But then, once again, that all depends on if Tino's fit. I'm going to go with Tino is fit, obviously, with him being doing media duties and things. I'm going to say Tino's fit. If Trippier's fit enough to start, do you put Trippier on the right? Do you put Tino on the left? Then, like I said, shift Dan Burn in a centre-back position. Do you rely on Lascelles, which I probably think that Eddie Howe will do? I think Lascelles will come in. I think Tino will be at right back. I don't think he'll risk Trippier. And I think Dan Burn will be back in that left back. And then, obviously, Fabian picks himself.
That is the question, isn't it? Because you've got to think about the balance. Does Eddie want that natural left foot or left centre-back, or is he going to just move Fabian across and put Lascelles in right centre-back? I think I'm with you, Chris. He'll probably do it that way.
When Burn first signed, he was a mint left-sided centre-back.
That's
where he was playing when he signed.
We had a lengthy discussion on Monday night on the All Spurs.
Yeah, well, I won't go over it again. And obviously, it's the same again. Don't want to flog a dead horse over the Lewis Hall situation as well. But like, he looks good.
Fantastic when he came on against Man City. He was absolutely, you know, some of the stuff he was doing against Man City, he stood out like a, you know, he stood out like a diamond.
There must be some tactical issue that Howe's got with him where he's obviously very gifted, you know, and things like that. I think he's not quite sus. You know how we had this issue with Gordon where he didn't quite know what was expected of him. That's the only thing I can think of. But when you're having to, like, you know, stick kids and retired players in at left back instead of him, it is annoying me. I can't lie. But,
I wonder if it really helped him that he was playing a back five at Man City, so it was easier for him to utilise Hall as a left wing back rather than a conventional left back in a four. But yeah, I think you're totally right. I think it's a tactical thing as well, and it's quite clear that he just needs to be able to get, you know, it's sort of like Eddie needs to work on getting the instructions into Hall and you know, working with Hall on how he's expected to behave in the game.
Just as another thing as well, because I don't want to stick on the back four forever, but within the England game we've just seen where Gordon started, having a fullback that runs beyond him, he looked absolutely unreal. Like, actually pulling a fullback away by having Chilwell run outside him and Gordon having that space inside. It was just a little window to be like, Gordon is obviously mint and he's having the season of his life without anyone actually helping him. Yeah. So I just want to be in a position where we can bomb someone forward and give him a bit of help, even if it makes us a bit useless.
You're right, Andy. I think even if you had Tino on that left-hand side or doing that overlap, and I know Dan Burn has been doing it more, but not that. I think Dan Burn gets to the point where he gets really close to Gordon, then Dan Burn seems to drift into the centre randomly, and he finds himself in that pocket of space.
And then we always lose the ball when that happens, and then he's always miles away.
like you said with the England game, if Gordon has that left wing back or whatever you want to call it, advanced left back, whatever you want to call it these days, that'll do that overlap and continue the run just to pull that player away. It's just a huge opening that Gordon has to do what he does as his trademark, where he just cuts inside. He does that tiny little touch with his right, but basically his toe tips, is that a thing? Toe tips?
It is now.
Toe tips. His toe. Then just smashes it in one movement. I would love to see that. And I think we probably will next season. I think Eddie Howe will stick with what he knows this season. Then we'll probably see fair, more next. Yeah,
absolutely. So yeah, we'll get into
toe tips.
So moving into that midfield. So obviously we now have lost Lewis Miley, so that's a kick in the teeth there, or a stump on the toes tips or whatever.
That was Harvey Barnes' injury, wasn't it? His tippy toes.
Aye. So we're going to have Bruno in there. That's a bog standard selection. Sean Longstaff will probably persist in there as well, I would think, much to however many people who are watching who aren't in that camp may disagree. And then obviously we'll have, well, we've got no option, have we? It's Joe Willock in it. It's going to be Joe Willock in there.
Yep.
Which will be nice to see, because I've missed his progression on the ball. We've seen it in flashes since he's started to return from his injury there.
And it just sums this season up, though, Daryl. It absolutely sums it up. You get one player in, then another one goes out. We're seeing it now with, obviously, Longstaff needs to come out because he is injured. Mm-hmm. So you're thinking, oh, now might be the chance where Lewis Miley might get another go at it. Then he gets injured and you think, all right, we'll just back the way we were all season.
Absolutely. And then you're left with the potential of maybe utilising Harvey Barnes in central midfield, or even, you know, we've already seen it so far this season, the promotion of Joe White as well coming through the ranks. But I think that's really a last resort for Eddie to have to do it again with another youth player to bring him in. And we're moving on to the front three again. You know, is it going to be the bog standard Gordon, Isak, Almiron, or is he going to put Murphy on the right? Barnes, if fit, is going to be the option to be the sub there. And obviously, whichever one of the Miggy or Murphy you don't use as well is there as a cover as well. But again, we're looking there that, are we going to then see a point in the game where he switches it around tactically and we see Isak out on the left and Gordon in the middle, as we have seen various times in this new year of the season, since Christmas time?
He played on the left wing for Sweden that day, didn't he, Isak?
Did he?
Spent a lot of time on the left-hand side, yeah.
So it's definitely something we'll be looking to do. And to be honest, I quite like the fluidity that we have by doing that as well. I don't mind doing that mid-game because it just gives the opposition something to think about with a change of personnel. They're both very effective in those roles. Is there anything else, any other potential changes you could see coming in, lads, before we move on?
I don't think there's any, mate. I think we've summed it up well. I think, like I said just before there, we're at the point where players are coming back, but then there's more getting injured. So the team at the minute, yes, there's a couple of variables there. Obviously, left back, right back, and right wing, really. There's not much that can be changed at the minute. We're desperate for it, but there's not much. Yeah. And we need to rely on the likes of the impact subs as well coming on.
Absolutely. Then the fresh legs up front that we're getting from Barnes or Almiron or Murphy, whichever.
Who was it who called Dan Byrne an impact sub? Was that Scott?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Which he was in that game. I'll give
He was.
He literally was an impact sub.
You know what it is? It's good to have Willock back. I love Willock as a footballer, and the more you save him, the better he gets. So Willock might be the difference maker for the rest of the season. Yeah,
absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think, like I said before, we've missed his ability on the ball and his ability to carry the ball forward. I think we saw an improvement even against Man City, where Bruno was able to put the odd ball into him and he was then able to just push forward and take it at times. And before we move on, because we've got two more bits left to do, we're going to do our predictions, but we're going to save them till the end. The next section is going to be everybody's favourite. It's Ref Watch. But before we get there, I'm going to ask Chris very quickly just to run through the bits and bobs that we need for people to find us and do all the necessary things. Go on, Chris.
Absolute pleasure, Daryl. So if you're watching this video, just like the video, means a lot to us. If you're listening to the audio as well, I think the only option you have is to give a star review. Give it 5 stars. Don't give it less than that. Give it 5 stars. Become a subscriber on the YouTube channel. It costs you nothing to do that. If you do want to give an extra bit back, it is just $2.99 a month to become a member. The membership for the channel has ramped up a little bit recently. So the last 2 weeks, you have had two videos for Mark versus Decker. The first one being, I've completely forgot what was the first one. What was the first one recorded? Oh, A to Z of Newcastle United. That's what it was. And on Monday,
can you think of one for S, by the way? I can't think of one for S.
Mark couldn't. And on Monday night, we recorded a higher or lower version of Newcastle United goal scorers, which was funny as well. Really funny as well. So you get extra stuff like that earlier than everybody else. And you do get access to the Telegram group as well, which is always a great place.
Fantastic, Chris. Great job. So next section, everybody's favorite, as we mentioned there before we went on to talk about how you can follow and whatnot. Ref Watch. It's here.
I love Ref Watch.
So this game. So
the only reason I'm here.
Yeah, is it Jared Gillett?
It's not Jared Gillett. He's nowhere near this thing, thank God. This referee for Saturday is Robert Jones from Merseyside.
Biggest question, though, Dasmo. Go on. Is he bald?
I don't think he is. I think this one's got hair as well.
Get in.
Thank God for that. So it's his fourth appointment of the season. This is following on from our loss at the Etihad way back in August, which was a more respectful 1-0 defeat rather than 4-5 or whatever. And then We also had him in the 3-0 win at Old Trafford in the League Cup, a game that we all remember very well. Really enjoyed it, obviously. And then also, not long after that, in December, we had him here at St. James's Park for a 1-0 victory over the same team we played at Old Trafford, Man United, in the league. So he's got 2 wins and a defeat for us so far this season. So that's quite a good little record going on there. And in terms of his record as a referee this season, we have 17 appearances in the Premier League for Mr. Jones, with 79 yellow cards and 4 red cards. And just also a quick mention for the man on VAR is David Coot. Just said it because he's got a funny surname, really.
Legal so, final yeah. ref.
Yes.
See, and, I'm paying attention to RefWatch.
Yeah, you've got to know all these things. So, RefWatch all done with. We're going to hit the predictions, and I'm going to go with Chris for this one first. Come on, Chris, what do you reckon?
I'm pretty confident. Not overly confident, but I think we will get a win. Yes, a win is massively important for us right now. And to be honest with you, it doesn't matter how many we win by. I more want that better performance because you look at the Wolves game, yes, we'll beat them. Was it 3-0? That would be Wolves. But it wasn't necessarily a dominant performance, which was delivered in that game. So I want 3 points. Yes, of course I do. But I also want that bit of a better performance as well. But I think if I'm picking a scoreline, I'm going to go 2-0. I think, honestly, I just think we've got too much pace. I think we'll have too much energy on the day as well.
Yeah. Andy?
I think similar. I don't think we'll keep a clean sheet just because it's been like the rarest thing in the world this season. So I'm not predicting. I actually think we'll go 1-0 down. I weirdly think Thomas Souček's going to score because he's just one of those players who scores annoying goals, like annoying tap-ins. Mm. So I think he's going to score from a set piece. But then I think we'll get at the, what was it they said, the least worst option in Zuma. and I think we'll have too much for them the other way. I think being at home's massive. I actually think we're two pretty similar teams this season. So, yeah. Like Gattuso said, sometimes maybe good, sometimes maybe, yeah. So I think it's a bit like that, isn't it? So I do think we'll have too much for them at home. I think we'll go 1-0 down in the first half, come out second half firing. I fancy Isak to get his first assist of the season because he hasn't done that in the Premier League yet. So I think he's going to set up Gordon for one, and then we will say last-minute penalty.
Gordon's on fire at the minute. Obviously, he had a great debut for England as well the other night. I think Gordon is going to come out the traps. I honestly think I absolutely love him, you know. I've never, ever wanted to be proven wrong so much in my life. And I'm so happy he's proved us wrong because he's a fantastic player. And I think he's just going to keep on getting better. And you can tell he just loves being here. He loves playing football at this club as well. And I think it's probably because we're giving him what he exactly wanted from the Everton fans towards the end, where he just wanted to be loved that bit more. And we're giving him that. And honestly, I think maybe he feels as if he's got a point to prove, but yes, he probably thinks that he owes us a bit as well for obviously the confidence which we've had him as a football club and as a fan base, and obviously the money we invested in him in as well. And honestly, he is worth every single penny that we have spent and more.
Yeah. So that's a 2-1 for you, Andy, yeah?
Sure.
Yeah? So I actually agree with what you were saying there, because, you know, I think it's certainly about Anthony Gordon. I think Anthony's going to be absolutely buzzing from the fortnight that he's had away with England. And he's going to be hitting the ground running. But I think it's going to be quite a goal-filled game, and I'm going to go for a 3-2 Newcastle win. And I just, simply because I feel like Bowen's going to score, and I also think that we can't do what I said earlier and avoid not giving James Ward-Prowse an opportunity. And I think he will get an opportunity from a set piece. And obviously for us, I think Gordon will get on the score sheet. And I definitely think Isak's going to get on the score sheet because, as we mentioned earlier, he seems to be scoring against West Ham all the time now. So there's one for him. And in terms of the third goal, you know what? I'll go with an Isak second. We'll have two. We'll have a brace from Isak and one from Gordon for a 3-2.
If your prediction's right, Daryl, That means that in the last handful of games at St. James's Park, we've seen a lot of goals.
Well, like, we have already, so I don't see why we should book the
It's
trend.
Been class.
Aye, when we win.
I think we are the highest in like goals for and against combined, aren't we, in the league? Mm. Yeah. The Entertainers too, man. The sequel.
Yeah. Well, hey, we'll see how we get on. So I'm going to close this one off right now by quoting a good friend of mine who I messaged earlier today, who's a West Ham fan. I said, "What? We're going to do this preview tonight. What do you think?" And his response when I asked him about West Ham, he said, "We're shit." So take that as you want to take it. I've been Daryl, and from Chris and Andy, I'd like to thank you all for watching this match preview for the West Ham game. And from me and the lads, we'll see you on the next one. Ta-ra!
Podcast Network.